Our second scripture lesson comes from the Gospel according to Mark, the 8th chapter, verses 27 through 34. Jesus went on with his disciples to the villages of Caesarea Philippi, and on the way, he asked his disciples, "Who do people say that I am?" And they answered him, "John the Baptist, and others Elijah, and still others one of the prophets." He then asked him, "But who do you say that I am?" Peter answered him, "You are the Messiah." And he sternly ordered them not to tell anyone about him. And then he began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by others, the chief priests and the scribes and the elders, and be killed, and on the third day rise again. He said all this quite openly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and looking at his disciples, Jesus rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." He then called the crowd with his disciples and said to them, "If any want to be my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me." This is the word of the Lord. Even though I grew up in a church manse, am the son of a Presbyterian minister, and was literally raised by congregations full of wonderful Christian believers, I had not heard the question until the summer after my junior year of high school. I remember being confused and slightly put off by the way in which it was asked. I remember the intense scrutiny present in the eyes of those sitting around me in the circle. It was a youth gathering at a friend's church across town. I had come because my friend loved church and because they had a basketball court in the church basement. Never underestimate the influence of these facilities. The evening of fun and hoops was to last from 7 to 10. I planned for 3 hours of nonstop 3-on-3 and shotgun-style basketball. However, at promptly 9 o'clock on the dot, we were all brought into one of the youth rooms and asked to sit in a circle. The youth pastor offered a brief prayer and then said we were going to go around the circle and each of us would answer the question in turn. "When did you accept Jesus Christ into your heart?" Now, I knew that I had been baptized on St. Andrew's Sunday, November the 1st, 1982, and that I was confirmed as a youth at Vandalia Presbyterian Church in the spring of 1995, but neither of those pieces of information seemed like what was being asked of me that evening. What the other people in the circle who went before me described was a moment of decision. One prayer that was prayed, one set of words that were spoken, welcoming Jesus into their hearts. And here I was, the preacher's kid, with no answer to a question of such great consequence in that circle. How embarrassing. And yet, when the pastor asked if anyone in the circle wanted to accept Jesus into their hearts that very night, that didn't seem quite right either. So I stumbled back onto the basketball court at 9:30 with great uncertainty about where I stood with Jesus or who he was to me. Now, this morning's gospel passage from Mark is often understood as one of those critical moments of decision, this time for Jesus' 12 disciples. Their opportunity to accept Jesus into their hearts. This motley crew of 12 has been with Jesus for quite some time by now, and the disciples have witnessed all sorts of miraculous healings and feedings, listened to spellbinding sermons and perplexing parables. They had watched his power and influence and the crowds following him grow. They have had front row seats to the controversy surrounding this man who some called prophet, some Messiah, some revolutionary, some blasphemous heretic. And here, at the exact midway point, Mark's gospel, Jesus turns to his disciples on the road with two key questions. Now, the first is merely descriptive. Who do people say that I am? What have you heard out there on the streets and in the fields about me? Well, the disciples have been paying attention. They have some good answers. They've been listening to the growing crowds surrounding Jesus, and they repeat the suggestions they've heard out there. They name both Elijah and John the Baptist, two extremely odd individuals who were believed to be precursors to the Messiah. They also indicate that many out there think that Jesus is a prophet, perhaps following in the tradition of Isaiah or Jeremiah or Amos or Micah. So the disciples pass this first test with flying colors. This is what others have been saying about you, Jesus. This is what the public opinion polls indicate. But he is not finished with his disciples yet. The next question goes far deeper, becomes much more personal and hard-hitting, because it moves from description to confession. Who do you say that I am? Note that the disciples are not asked to accept Jesus into their hearts, not now. Instead, they are summoned to state succinctly who he is, what he means, what difference he makes. And this is, I believe, the question that is behind and beyond all questions for people of faith in the 21st century. Not our collective position on a political issue or other religions or money or even spirituality, as much as I have enjoyed this sermon series, but this question. Who is Jesus Christ to you and to me? Now, what difference does he make? Now, we know we live in a time when this question is answered in radically divergent ways, when some profess faith in Jesus Christ and use that faith as a weapon of abuse or a fortress of isolation. We live in a time when the most amplified voices of faith are the most extreme and fanatical. Now, more than perhaps any time, since the early Christian movement, we, you and I, must have a clear answer and a compelling response to the question of who Jesus is. And friends, we must move beyond dispassionate descriptions of a merely historical Jesus that have captivated the mainline denominations as we've lost members each year for decades. Equally, we must move beyond a domesticated picture of Jesus Christ more suited for bumper stickers and keychains than life-changing discipleship. We must break the chains of lukewarm faith enabled by the indifference afforded by our comfort. While we Presbyterians have sat back and tended to institutional maintenance and survey taking, our platform is burning. And so Jesus asks, then as now, who do you say that I am? Well, we have Peter. As usual, the bravest and boldest of the disciples, and he waits barely until the question ends before responding with immediate certainty, "You are the Messiah." Well, from my vantage point, the answer is spot on. Peter has just hit the bullseye. And yet there must be something missing, because the rest of the story is so odd, so hard to follow, so counterintuitive. Instead of congratulating Peter on a simple and direct answer to a very good question, Jesus silences him and then immediately begins to predict his own suffering, death, and resurrection. I think the juxtaposition is one of the oddest in all of Scripture. Peter pours out his faith in Jesus as Messiah, and Jesus responds with ominous words of pain and rejection and death. It is as if the gospel writer Mark wants to communicate two things at the same time. Yes, Peter is right. Jesus is the Messiah. But he is not the Messiah that Peter expects or desires. The path of this Messiah will not lead to imperial power or military victory over the hated Roman Empire, but to a hill called Golgotha, the place of the skull. Peter is dumbfounded by this prediction, this teaching, and he tries to silence Jesus. Scripture says he took him aside and began to rebuke him. But Jesus will not allow it. Instead, after scolding Peter, he turns outward to the crowds of people surrounding him and speaks these words, "If you want to be my followers, deny yourselves, take up your own cross, and follow me." The message is clear. It is not enough to call Jesus the Messiah. We must be ready to embrace this Messiah, the one who calls into question our deepest allegiance and demands faithful discipleship, the one who requires us to move from selfishness to generosity, from fear to love, from hatred to compassion, from the narrowness of self-righteousness to the wideness of mercy, the one whose journey, like ours, will include suffering and pain and rejection. If we want to follow this Messiah, it's going to take more than mere acceptance or assent or invitation. It's going to take transformation. It's going to take change in habits and assumptions and actions. Because when Jesus asks, "Who do you say that I am?" he is not expecting the recitation of a creed or a comprehensive affirmation of faith or some theologically astute statement. He is not asking for metaphysical interpretation of incarnation. He's not asking for biography. As one preacher has written, the invitation is not to write a thesis, but to trust, to bet everything on him. It means to consider the proposal that this Jesus is the truth. Not a truth that excludes others or targets others, but truth nonetheless. And that the truest, best, most authentically human way to live this one singular life of yours is by following him. Who do you say that I am? Is not a demand for definition. It is an invitation to discipleship. Because when we confess who Jesus is, we commit to a life that bears witness to this faith. In this congregation, we do it all the time. When new members come to join our community by reaffirmation or transfer or baptism, all of you who are a part of the congregation make promises to welcome them, to encourage them, and to accept them as vital members of this community. And I promise you that saying we do, that's the easy part. Living out that promise takes effort and time and commitment. This week I was reflecting on a sentence that is spoken from this pulpit every single Sunday morning. Each week we say, "All are welcome at Morningside." Now it may seem obvious, and yet it might be the most dangerous part of our worship service. Because when we speak this theological truth aloud, it ceases to be abstract. And we are called to live it out in the life of the congregation. And this might mean welcoming those who think or vote differently than you. It might mean welcoming those who speak a different language or whose culture is unfamiliar to you. It may mean welcoming someone to worship whose presence here makes you uncomfortable. But our commitment to inclusion within the church must be more than words if we are to be a witness to our faith in a radically inclusive Lord. To confess Jesus Christ as Messiah, as Peter did, is not only to accept him, it is to commit our lives to him. Our faith is only consequential in the deepest sense if we lift up our cross to follow him. This week I was talking with a friend, and we were both sharing how disturbed and saddened we've been the plans and actions of Reverend Terry Jones of the Dove Outreach Center in Gainesville, Florida. I complained that it was so deeply unfair that such intolerant and offensive perspectives were being allowed to speak for me and all other Christians. But my friend offered this profound and simple corrective response. Chris, they only speak for you if you don't speak for yourself. Jesus turned to his disciples and asked, "Who do you say that I am? Speak for yourselves. What difference do I make in your life?" Sisters and brothers, perhaps the time has come for us to speak for ourselves in bold words and in generous action, revealing the faith that has remade our lives and has the capacity to remake even our world. Perhaps you know that the earliest Christian affirmation, before ever there was a council at Nicaea or the formation of the Apostles' Creed, the earliest affirmation was three simple words that meant everything to our ancient ancestors in faith. Jesus is Lord. No one else is Lord. Not the emperor in Rome or the chief priests in Jerusalem or the gods of Greece or the idols of our own creation. Jesus is Lord. It's the most revolutionary and costly statement we Christians make because it calls us out to active discipleship. It gives us the freedom and joy of a life lived with purpose and meaning if we allow the truth of those words to wash over us and change us. If we allow this meal to be more than bread and juice, but the body and blood of the one whom we follow. This table, this community of faith, this faith, has the capacity to give you what you most need, but you have to be willing to lean in to the mystery, to the one who is Messiah and Lord. And so this morning, may I suggest that the most important question for all of us is not when did you invite Jesus into your heart, but what did you do with him once he got there?